At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
If you're a facilities manager at a warehouse and your HVAC system goes down, it can turn up the heat, literally. But don't sweat it. Grainger has you covered. Grainger offers over a million industrial-grade products for all your operations, including warehouse HVAC maintenance. And even better, they offer access to experts and fast delivery, so you and your warehouse can both keep your cool. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey, everybody, this is Matthew Soltysiak, and you're listening to Not the Same Old Lions podcast, part of the Minute Media Podcast Network. This season, it's all grit. I speak with a variety of guests and interview key players, gaining more insight on what makes this team go. The Detroit Lions are now in a new, grittier era, and we look beyond just a kneecap when it comes to the analysis. Welcome to another episode. In this episode, we talk all things Detroit Lions with a special guest from Sports Illustrated. We'll talk about how the team has grown from last year, look at camp insights from this season, and where the roster stands at this point. Let's get to it, Lions fans.
Hi, this is Billy Sims, and you're listening to Not the Same Old Lions podcast.
Joining me is John Macaroon, founder of Detroit Sports Podcast. You can hear him talk Detroit Lions on the Detroit Lions podcast called Lone Wolves, and you can find his written work at Lions on SI, and of course that SI stands for Sports Illustrated. You can also follow him on Twitter at Detroit Podcast. John has covered Detroit sports for more than a decade, going all the way back to 2013. John, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. Always enjoy any opportunity to talk about the Detroit Lions. I see all the work you do out there in the community as well, covering the Lions, giving your opinions. I look forward to hearing what you have to say and what you're thinking about the 2024 Lions, a big year ahead.
That it is. And John, is there anything I missed in your introduction that you want to make sure the listeners know about?
Yeah, no doubt about it. Everything's great. A great introduction. It's been fun to cover the Lions for Sports Illustrated since 2019. And now with the rise of Dan Campbell, it's just made it I was lucky in that I looked at it like an opportunity to cover the Lions under Matt Patricia. It was such a grind, but now you realize that Dan Campbell is the complete opposite in terms of the way in which he conducts his business. So going through the tough times actually prepared me for when Dan Campbell kind of made it a little bit easier with the flow of information. So I was grateful that Matt Patricia used a lot of word salad to describe things, to say nothing. But now it's Dan Campbell's show, and to see completely from day one, from the time he stepped foot onto the Allen Park premises until now, where we're all talking about Super Bowl matchups, it's been a blessing to be a part of it.
Yeah, it really is. It is a stark contrast between the two personalities. So let's get some of your detailed insights in a few different areas. Let's start a little more general because, you know, you've covered the Lions practices regularly, attended their games. I just want to know in general, how is this squad, is this group looking compared to maybe a squad from a year ago at this time? You know, have you noticed differences? And you could even add it the year before that if you wanted, but especially this year compared to last year.
Yeah, it's been intriguing. Really, a lot of people are paying attention to the defense. You recognize that Brad Holmes really understood that there was a clear weakness when you saw the secondary last year, especially against the 49ers. And when the momentum swung, plays weren't made, and unfortunately the Lions blew an opportunity, a real big chance, an opportunity that they had to get to the Super Bowl. So efforts were made to revamp the defense. And what I've loved is the defense has really gone out there day in and day out, like really with a chip on their shoulder, because everybody's talking about Jared Goff and Jahmyr Gibbs and what J-Mo can do. And it's a defense that wants to go out there and punch you in the mouth. And they're not afraid to punch their own teammates. And it's been crazy to see the level of violence and aggression that this defense is playing with on a daily basis. You see Derek Barnes, who's become an emotional leader. He's out there really on a day-to-day basis grinding, and I think he's kind of taking on that leadership role for that defense as well. And so I see a competitiveness, a drive, a grit, a renewed spirit to say, hey, we're not just going to let this offense just do everything against us. And you see Tyrion Arnold and Ennis Grakeshaw prior to their injuries, you see their compete level. So I think that the defense has improved in terms of the talent level, and there's opportunities to make plays. Now the offense kind of has had some rough days, but I think once they get it into gear, I thought the last practice that we saw, clearly we saw Jared Goff have one of his best practices. He was zipping the ball all over the place. And it was literally, my observation was, the stars shine. It was the J-Mo show. It was Amon-Ra St. Brown. It was Jared Goff zipping the ball over the place. So they look ready to me. And so the fun part of the job now is, with such a deep roster, you really are basically fighting for maybe 8 to 10 spots that are open in terms of depth. That's how good the roster is. And you just kind of see from just 4 years ago when Dan Campbell stepped foot out there, you know, he was dealing with wide receivers and an offensive unit that really was conservative and not really that prolific. To now, you have so many weapons that people are, you know, obviously clearly satisfied with the top end of the offense, but they're really debating and looking at wide receiver 4 and 5. And you're like, I get it. I get the interest. But when you got the level of offensive talent that this team has, whoever's wide receiver 4 or 5 is not going to contribute that much. I would be shocked if that person even gets 15 targets for the whole year, because you have 5 players, maybe even now a rookie running back, that's going to take the opportunities to get the touches. So it's a great thing to debate and discuss, but I just think that the talent level is so vastly different that it makes watching football on a different level. Like I really look at it like fine-tune details on a daily basis as to how this team could look in the regular season, man. I feel like, and I've said it before, I feel like I'm watching a Super Bowl caliber team, and it's fun to see the day-to-day grind of a team that has such high expectations.
Yeah, well, I love that insight about the defense kind of taking that chip on their shoulder, because you're right, the offense, I mean, having ranked so high statistically in so many categories the last year and a half, that you could see that. And you know, the defense has had a lot more parts revamped. So you've talked about the practices. We've seen that with the players going against each other. But we haven't seen a lot of those offensive starters in games, because most of them have been held out. You were able to go to the joint practices in New York. How did our offensive guys look against a different team? Because, you know, you see them against their own team, you know your own tendencies and stuff. How did they look in those joint practices? What was your overall takeaways when they were going up against the Giants players?
Yeah, it was fun to go out there. I thought it was a great opportunity to do something new. I haven't, you know, for me personally, the opportunities to go on the road, I just haven't taken advantage of them too often. I like the opportunity to stay at home with a young family. So now as the kids get a little bit older, I'm taking a little bit more of an opportunity to go out on the road and to see things, especially with joint practices. Clearly having the knowledge of what happened last year, Matthew, it was crazy in that the talk from the Giants was they remembered, and I remembered it too, the first practice that was held in Allen Park between the Lions and the Giants last year. The Lions punked the Giants, and they were out-physicaled, outclassed, and the Lions really put together a great practice, and everybody remembered it. So the Giants came into it just looking to get physical with the Lions. They were just looking to, hey, we're going to set the tone, and we're going to not let the Lions do anything in regards to, we're not going to have our physicality questioned. We're going to go toe-to-toe with the Super Bowl caliber team. And that's what they did. There was a lot of pushing and shoving. And the first thing you notice was one of the first guys that was getting chipped a lot was Amon-Ra St. Brown, getting a lot of extra nudges, getting a lot of extra attention. So you're like, wow, the Giants took notice of the Lions stars. But Amon-Ra wasn't going to take it. He was one of the first ones that first day to start swinging. And we saw, you know, right away, like, oh, this is going to be different. But I thought the highlight was Goff tossing balls to Jameson Williams. He clearly, when he turned on the Jets, boom, it was a nice sight to see. He burned the Giants defensive back, and he was like maybe 3 yards past him, and he got a touchdown. He got a red zone touchdown as well. I thought the offense acclimated well. Now, on the second day, you did start to see a little bit of concern with this, the second string offensive line. You know, some of the depth players were kind of sloppy, a lot of flags, procedural type stuff. And I thought the Giants acclimated themselves well in a lot of spots. In terms of the Lions defense, I thought they struggled with Malik Nabers, but who wouldn't? I mean, he put on a show. He put on a clinic, and he was just doing his thing, and he was ready to showcase in front of the world what he's about. But I don't take too much into that because, look, Malik is a top 10 wide receiver, and you look at it and you say, hey, he's going to do some things. And these practices, while they're very competitive, you're still not game planning. You're not putting together intricate schemes. The quarterback can't be touched. So what my takeaway was the starters were ready. They got a good week of work. I thought that Penei Sewell and Taylor Decker handled themselves well throughout the week. But the name that is constantly being written in my book, that's just constantly shining and showcasing, is 97. Aiden Hutchinson just looks like a monster. He's ready to go. He's constantly in the backfield. He definitely put forth a nice effort against the Giants. But really what was unfortunate was you thought day two would be a little bit cleaner after the first round of brawls and stuff like that. But it was just as wild and ferocious on day two. And it was tough, Matthew, because it was so hot. The heat was bearing down on all the reporters, and there was just no shade. The fans in the stands got shade, but we just had to, bear it out and tough it out. But it was just really, tough because you just physically noticed how hot it was out there. But all the fights that took place, then you see Malik Nabers taking a swing at Kirby Joseph, which really is not the most wise thing to do. And then another brawl started. So it got chippy. It got chippier as the practice went on. They had to actually cut a period short to cut practice because I truly believe if the practice would have gone on, there was going to be a 100 people brawling, and they were going to have two teams just going at it. And so that cooler heads prevailed. Everybody got off the field and we got to get some hydration, but I thought it was a good week of work. And to be honest, knowing that these coaches know each other, the talk about the physicality was lip service. I think Brian Daboll wanted the Lions to come in, and he wanted Dan Campbell's team to, hey, be physical and show what you got so that our guys can match you as well, so that we can kind of get some momentum as well. These guys know each other. Dan Campbell and Brian Daboll, they're close. So the extra fisticuffs and the stuff, I just think was two football teams battling it out and going mano a mano. But the testosterone level was quite high. For me as a fan, I loved it. And the extra minutes to kind of not focus on a practice because there's so much going on was great. But I thought the Lions got a great week of work with those two practices. The game unfortunately sucked, which was, that's how it goes sometimes.
It does. And that's why that perspective from the practice is so important. I was at the practice a year ago when they had the joint practices in Allen Park against the Giants. And I do remember the chippiness there between current and former Lions players on both sides. And so that was an interesting thing. And so not a surprise that they were physical. And I appreciate the part you said about, Brian Daboll probably wanting the Lions to come in and be physical because his team is in a very different spot than it was a year ago. And that insight on Aiden Hutchinson, I mean, none of the Lions fans have been able to see him except in practice, obviously. So that's encouraging to see that, hey, maybe he's going to take even another step. And the fact that he already took such a big step last year is like, man, I mean, boy, did we get lucky and hit a home run with that number two overall pick. I mean, the last time we got that lucky with the number two overall pick was probably when Jamarcus Russell went number one to the Raiders and we got Calvin Johnson. So that's exciting to see that with Hutchinson. Now, you alluded to the receiving game a little bit. You talked about how Goff was looking pretty good. The ascension of Jameson Williams, which I am a huge proponent of. I believe it's going to happen as well. I think you saw glimpses of it last year in the second half of the season. And so you just see it kind of growing through camp here. Now, we got to go beyond that, though. We got to talk about the part that I think we've all been talking about since March. And then once the Lions did not re-sign Josh Reynolds, we talked about it even more. I kind of think if we had re-signed Josh Reynolds, we're not even having this conversation right now. But everybody thought Donovan Peoples-Jones was going to be wide receiver three. And when we say wide receiver three, we're talking the prototypical 6'2", 6'3", wide receiver for the outside, the red zone target. Antoine Green got hurt. He was starting to show something. Everyone thought Donovan Peoples-Jones was going to ascend and grow into this spot now that he had that whole offseason. Tyrese Fountain was getting some great press early on. So a couple things. Your thought on that room right now and where it stands, I guess.
Yeah, it's intriguing, right? Because I get the idea that people want to know that, okay, the fourth and fifth receiver, who's going to be the next tall X receiver that you can put out there on the outside? Because Josh Reynolds, really, you got to give him credit. He was able to make the plays. And unfortunately, I think that his contract that he got with Denver was a little bit more than the Lions probably wanted to offer. And look, you know, the lasting memory was him having drops in a big moment. And that's unfortunate. I don't know how much that would really play in terms of, you know, obviously he's got a connection with Jared Goff. I think that it would ended up being a numbers game. I think the drops clearly were a factor, but I do think that he was a reliable individual, a wide receiver that when he received the football typically extended drives and got first downs. So the comfort level definitely made people very secure with what was going on with the offense. But now you look at it and you say, okay, you look at Josh Reynolds' stats from last year and you recognize now you have an emerging receiver in Jamison Williams, who is making highlight catches. You expect him to fight and battle to be the number two. I have said all offseason, I'm just hoping that, you know what, his competitive drive, I want to see him come on with a shirt that says hashtag number one. He should want to be the number one receiver. Like, give me the football. Like, if the football is in my – and he's starting to develop that, clearly. He's excitable. He put in the work in terms of added strength and his route running and the crispness of the fluidity of his footwork and where he needs to be. He's done the work. And you look at it and you say, you know what, okay, you are going to give Jamison Williams a lot of targets. So that's one player. You got Amon-Ra St. Brown, who's just a natural out there. He goes out there, he produces every single practice. You need a key third down rep, Amon-Ra St. Brown gets the football. You need a one-on-one battle that you want to see and get a win, it's Amon-Ra St. Brown. So clearly you're very comfortable, I think, with one and two. And Jamison Williams could be now the next step in terms of his progression is to be that deep threat and to expand his game, to be used like a Deebo Samuel in different sets and routes and handoffs and things like that. So that's that. And now you have Sam Laporta, who's going to get better. So that's three. Now you also have Jahmyr Gibbs and David Montgomery. That's five offensive targets. And I think Brock Wright is going to expand his game offensively with the contract that you gave him. Now he's clearly him and Shane Zylstra, I believe, who will make the roster will probably be, you know, more inclined to block, but you have now opportunities for two tight end sets. So you're going to be able to run the football a little bit more. And now Ivaki continues to showcase that he can be a reliable option out of the backfield. Now you have opportunities for him and Craig Reynolds. So I think that the loss of Josh Reynolds will be made up and spread out over those five guys. And then, you know, there's opportunities as well. We cannot discount Caliph Raymond. He's number three. He's been held out of the games because he's getting the veteran treatment because he's earned it. He makes plays. So you understand, okay, you do need maybe that one more big body target. And everybody thought it would be maybe Antoine Green or Donovan Peoples-Jones or Darius Fountain, but it hasn't been consistent. So it's an area of need. Now, look, Brad Holmes will always look to improve the roster. I've written on Lions on SI, maybe Darius Slayton from the Giants, who you just watched in terms of having a joint practice. He's maybe falling a little bit on the depth chart, maybe a player that ends up, you know, getting cut unexpectedly. You know, some are clamoring for Julio Jones or Cortland Sutton. There's opportunities out there to go out there and get an individual that can be consistent and maybe get 10, 15 receptions, be another option. But my concern level is low because the offense has so many weapons that it's something to talk about for sure in regards to you want as many talented individuals. And I think you can upgrade from Fountain and DPJ. It is a head scratcher because, you know, Dan Campbell comes out and he says, hey, I'm dying for somebody to step it up. DPJ, you know, he unfortunately, it's a combination of a lot of things why he's struggling. You know, he's got Sudfeld throwing him the ball and he's wild and Hendon Hooker has been up and down. So it's just, you don't have the time to develop that chemistry with the guys that you have. And it just seems like, you know, even though they did bring him back, maybe you just have him on the roster, but it doesn't seem like based on his play that he's earned that spot. Maybe this is the week where the light bulb just really shines and he gets it together. But if I were to do, and a lot of my writers on Lions on SI, they do the 53-man projections. But, you know, if I did one, I wouldn't have, DPJ on the roster because I think Caden Davis has outplayed him, and so has Darius Fountain. So it's unfortunate that that you know nobody stepped up to make people more comfortable. But I think that by the time cuts happen at the end of August, I think that I agree with a lot of the other writers that probably wide receiver four is not currently on this roster right now.
Okay, you hit on a lot of different topics there. So let me kind of go back to a couple of those. The first one, when you talked about, you know, we have Amon-Ra St. Brown and Jameson Williams. Then we have Laporta and the top two running backs with Montgomery and Gibbs. On our show, we've kind of been talking about that. It's almost like positionless football, right? Because you're going to see wide receivers running the ball. You're going to see running backs catching the ball. Sam Laporta is not a small target. He could become your red zone guy. So you're right. There are a lot of really good options out there if they don't have that prototypical storied, you know, Herman Moore type wide receiver to throw to in the red zone or anywhere else on the field. If they go that route, you know, then they might be, you think there's a chance that they might go out and look for another wide receiver tall. Because, yes, Khalif Raymond's going to be in there and he's going to be very active as well. Let me go back to why maybe somebody hasn't stepped up. Because you're right, Coach Campbell's asked someone to step up. And he's even hinted that they might even carry an extra running back if they don't have the right wide receiver stepping up. And, yes, we could see Sione Vaki stepping up more and having more of a role. I mean, we saw those dump off passes in the last game. You touched on the fact that there are a variety of reasons perhaps we haven't seen the most. Now, that wouldn't explain what we maybe haven't seen in practice, but the first game, ugly game, bad weather. Second game, much better weather, much better offensive line protection. But it comes down to, here's my question, does it matter that it's Nate Sudfeld throwing him the ball and Hendon Hooker, who was in bad weather conditions, got knocked out, and then he's still learning a lot right now. And, you know, could there be a chance that once Lions fans see him with Jared Goff, there's a better chance of him succeeding, or is it he's not getting separation and it's just still a disappointment at this point?
Yeah, no, and you make a good point in that as you were speaking, and as I recall some of the things I've said on previous podcasts, you look at it and you say, okay, DPJ could be, you know, an individual where you say, okay, we're not expecting much, but just to go out there and, you know, be an option for, you know, a 15-yard slant route or an out route or a comeback route, that you don't need all that many targets toward him. You just need his big body frame out there that he can high point the ball on occasions. And that's where I could see. I would not be surprised if he makes the roster because they're investing in him and they just want to see what he's capable of. But yeah, unfortunately for him, he's being showcased, but he's not producing. And when your coach says, hey, I'm dying for someone to step up, you know, the person that did was Caden Davis. He made a play. He got the football and ran it 42 yards for a touchdown. He's been getting open and making plays. And so has Isaiah Williams, who also is a little bit similar to Amon-Ra St. Brown. You project him to kind of be on special teams. I think he makes the team. He's been consistent and he's done everything that the coaching staff has asked for. So that's where DPJ, you could say, okay, if you go out and get somebody else, it's, you know, a situation in which I'm not concerned because you already have, like we said, six options that on third down, if they're going to a DPJ over a St. Brown, Jameson Williams, Sam Laporta, Jahmyr Gibbs, David Montgomery, Sione Vaki, I'm going to be like, what's going on? Why is that number? Why is 12 being called in any of the formations on third down? Why is DPJ's 19 being called when you got six other guys that are so much better? And you just, for the most part, you could just dial up that number 14 and he's getting you that first down. And I just think that the Lions offense is going to be in so many advantageous positions. They're going to run the football behind a great offensive line. I don't see them being in third and seven far too often. I think they'll be in third and manageable quite a bit and they'll move the chains. So I think people are clamoring to know about wide receiver four or five because they want the entire 53-man roster to be all pros. I get it. But at the same token, when you got six players that are really solid and are emerging and getting better, we're not even still talking about Jahmyr Gibbs running the ball explosively, getting out of the backfield. You could have Alvin Kamara on this roster. And you got David Montgomery, who I think is going to be in tandem with Gibbs to have 1,000 yards. So I, you know, to put it it's good to talk about, to explore players on the roster, to have as many talented people as possible. But if wide receiver four is not as prolific as people want, I don't think it's going to be a factor at all in for this football team. I just don't worry about it too much. But other than the fact that, you know, you could definitely, for another red zone target, need a big bodied person. And maybe DBJ steps up this week, you hope.
Yeah, and, you know, it's just amazing how much the conversation has shifted in the last 2 years. I mean, remember when we didn't know who wide receiver one and two were going to be, and we were like 2 weeks away from the start of the season? And obviously, this matters because expectations of the team have changed. But what, like you said earlier, like, we're looking at a very different situation that, you know, we've talked about on our show. We're going to be really sad when roster cuts come, because, I mean, you're always sad because you don't like to see that for somebody, but there's going to be some talented players that we're going to see some other teams probably want to pick up. And Isaiah Williams is one of those guys who has definitely, you know, when I was at camp earlier this year, he looked really good, and he, you know, looked, had some great moments against Kansas City. And so that'll be an interesting to keep an eye on. But like you, I don't think the sky is falling if we don't bring in another person for that wide receiver 3, 4, 5 spot, because we do have so many weapons. We do have so many options available to us. I want to stay on the quarterback position for just a minute, because I know you've been around the team long enough that I think you could maybe shed some insight on this. And, you know, you were there when the Lions had Blau and Boyle as the backups, and, you know, from watching them, you know, whether it was on Hard Knocks or, you know, in preseason, it's just always something a little bit left to be desired on the table there with the play in the game. But I understand, I'm sure they were pretty good students of the game and were able to help coach up other players and get them better, and even coach up, you know, the starting quarterback, Jared Goff, before game day. But they were gone, they've left, and we've had Nate Sudfeld come in. And, you know, the lasting, my first memory of Nate Sudfeld, and unfortunately the most pronounced memory of Nate Sudfeld, is when Jalen Hurts was benched. So Nate Sudfeld would play the game for Philly, and half of the media felt Philly was trying to lose that game, and that's why they were keeping Jalen Hurts on the bench. And so that was my impression. Now, I know coaching can really change a player. I mean, Tua Tagovailoa talked about it just very recently on how much a change in coaching really helped him grow as a player. And so I'm never going to doubt the ability of Dan Campbell and his staff to coach a player up. But it seems like we've seen the ceiling of Nate Sudfeld as a player. He's practiced well in spurts last year and this year. And I firmly believe the Lions are not going to bring in another quarterback, because they're going to go in with Hendon Hooker as a number two, and Nate Sudfeld will probably go to the practice squad, and he'll be your emergency quarterback. I think the only reason the Lions would bring in a different quarterback is if they didn't think Hendon Hooker was ready for that number two spot. So I guess my question for you is, long roundabout way, is can you explain the Nate Sudfeld situation, the circumstance, and is there a reason that with a player who's been around as many years as he has, with having as little experience as he has, that they're sticking with somebody in that prototypical situation versus a different protege?
Yeah, no doubt. You said the S word, right? Sudfeld, we got to go down this road. And look, man, it's one of those things where supporters don't want to see Nate Sudfeld on the field. They want to see reps for Hendon Hooker. And it's understandable. You want to see his development. You want to see what he brings to the table, because the upside is so much higher. You want Hendon Hooker to make mistakes. You want him to go up against better competition. But what the Lions do a really good job of is they don't just throw their talent into the wolves. And Aaron Glenn, actually, if you pay attention to what he said, our job as coaches is to develop the players, but also to protect the players. And it was really insightful when he said that, because really what it means is that they believe that they will test Hendon Hooker when the time is right. And typically that starts from practice. And Hendon Hooker has been inconsistent. You know, he's had some really awful practices. He's gotten incrementally better. And he's basically you're looking at a rookie quarterback on the field. So that's why you want somebody with a little bit more experience in the league with Nate Sudfeld. The reason why he's on the roster is he's got a relationship with Jared Goff. And there's more to a person's spot on the roster at the quarterback spot than just a playing ability. And for Jared Goff, it's another set of eyes on the field, another coach. So it's somebody that can see things and relay the information, understand. Nate Sudfeld's very smart. But unfortunately, his playing ability just isn't where you or I or anybody that watches. The big question mark is, and you have to look at it from this perspective and context, if something happens to Jared Goff, you, myself, or anybody listening should not be comfortable that Hooker or Sudfeld will get you wins. Because Sudfeld, while he has, Hooker, while he has taken strides forward, there's still lots he's got to learn. He's only played against the Giants and the Chiefs. And the Chiefs in the second half are against guys that might end up like you and I doing podcasts in 2 weeks. So that's not the level of competition that you can say comfortably, oh, if something happens to Goff, that, hey, we throw in Hooker and he's going to be successful. There's a good chance he may have some success with the ones. But at the same token, I would foreshadow what I've seen in practice where I think he could move the football, but at the same token with elevated turnovers, with some mistakes, because opposing defenses are not giving you anything in the preseason. That's where when I see assessments and interpretations, Hendon Hooker's number two. Well, I think that's just being a little bit short-sighted and wishful thinking. But I think the reason you could say that is Hendon Hooker is going to be the backup by default because Sudfeld just isn't good enough talent-wise to play clean football at this level right now. And that's just the way it is. So I just think that he's better in the room than he's ever going to be on the field. And there's something to that where, hey, when your $50 million quarterback needs somebody to look to, he's looking to look and talk to Nate Sudfeld about certain things away from the field and on the field with different defenses. So it's just the way it is. I would not be surprised if Sudfeld is caught and they do invest in a different quarterback. I mean, they went to Teddy Bridgewater last year late. So maybe is it Ryan Tannehill? You know, if nobody goes down and there's no open starting job, I think Ryan Tannehill really is the perfect backup to come in here and ease everybody's mind. And I said it on the Lone Wolves podcast. I said, if you're Hendon Hooker and you're being taught by Goff and Sudfeld, I think that you get more value out of being taught by Tannehill and Jared Goff. You have an individual in Ryan Tannehill who's started in the league, who's led drives, who's had comeback situations, who's had some success. So I think you're doing a disservice to Hendon Hooker by having Sudfeld in the room as well, if there's an opportunity to upgrade. So I would not be surprised if Sudfeld is not on this roster, but at the same token, you're right. You know, they could value the leadership that he has, and he could be somebody that ends up clearing waivers or things like that. So it'll be interesting to see, but yeah, it's to me, the most important situation now is let's see Hendon Hooker start against the Steelers and maybe even play three quarters.
Yeah, I think that's what every Lions fan is hoping for. Heck, we were hoping for it this past week against Kansas City. Obviously, it made sense with the limited practice reps and stuff like that, that they didn't do that. But yeah, I think everyone's hoping he starts against Pittsburgh and plays at least the first half, if not three quarters or more. Get him those reps, because Coach Campbell's talked about that. The reps, reps, reps.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Aloe or Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret? With Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whatever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/try to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/try.
Well, John, let's jump over to the defense a minute here. That defensive line, you already talked about Aiden Hutchinson looking pretty good out there on the edge in practice and whatnot. How's the defensive line looking to you? Is it, you know, leading to the direction that we hope and think it's going to go? They were really good against stopping the run last year, the Lions were, and that starts with those guys up front. Is it still trending that direction? Now, we've got a lot of new parts there too, right? The Okorah brothers are out. Benito Jones is out. There's another player too who are no longer in the mix for some of these roles, and we got new guys in there. So how's the front defensive line looking?
Yeah, I'm excited. That's really the side of the football I really gravitate more towards in terms of my understanding of defensive play, but still, you know, looking at both sides of the ball. But I love the defense. I love what they've done. First and foremost, clearly they acknowledged the mistake last year. John Scott Jr. was inexperienced. He came from college, and it didn't resonate, you know, in terms of the way in which some of the guys developed and the execution on the field. Now you bring in Terrell Williams, who everybody's raving about, has experience, respected widely amongst the entire NFL, amongst the top defensive line coaches in the league. And I think that when you have a Broderick Martin and a Josh Pascal and a Levi Onwuzurike, those guys are going to be key for that defensive line. And today, earlier, I had a chance to talk to in person on a podcast, DJ Reader. You haven't even talked and seen yet DJ Reader and his ability to stop the run and what he can do to unlock Aleem McNeil. I think that, you know, DJ Reader probably is more going to probably, you could probably look at it and say that, you know, the first couple games he won't be available, but towards the end of the year, when it's most important for this football team to have the defensive line healthy, you could potentially line up, and this is great if they all stay healthy. Just think about this to excite everybody. Aiden Hutchinson on the edge, next to Levi Onwuzurike, next to DJ Reader, next to Aleem McNeil, next to Marcus Davenport. Those five guys, if they can stay healthy, with Josh Pascal and James Houston coming in reserve roles, with Broderick Martin coming in for spells, that is a beautiful combination to give Aaron Glenn the opportunity to win with four guys. And I look at it like, hey, there's opportunities now to blitz more too. And you say, my goodness, you could win, you know, in certain situations with four or five. You could bring in the Sam linebacker and Derek Barnes if he can blitz too. So the defensive line, to me, I think is poised to do some damage this year. And when you have a better secondary, then you don't exactly have to get to the quarterback with the same level of frequency, because you know, the cornerbacks are going to cover. You can maybe even take the extra beat to get to the quarterback. But if you unlock Aiden Hutchinson, if Davenport or Houston unlocks Aiden Hutchinson and you get 15 to 20 sacks from him, it's going to be unstoppable. It's going to be a situation in which, you know, we're all expecting this defense to go from 20th to 15th to 14th or so. If you can dream big and this defensive line can get to 10th, or this defense overall with the great defensive line gets to 10th, now you're talking about 12, 13, 14 wins this year.
Yeah, the defense can make a big difference in that
big difference
aspect. And yeah,
I love it. Starts it's with just that juicy. Front it's just group. So juicy.
Yeah, and it starts right with that front group. And we already know we have in the linebackers. You know, that's such a deep room. And, you know, if Jack Campbell takes a small step, even a little bit more of a step from his rookie year, that will make that linebacking core that much stronger. But you hit on the area that probably has the biggest question mark. Has the biggest turnover. The defensive line has some turnover, but the secondary has so many new parts. It's looking like Davis and Arnold are probably going to be our one and our twos, our top two defensive backs. And I'm wondering about the nickel spot. Do you see that being Rakestraw or Robertson? So, you know, and again, if you see something different than what I just said, let me know. But what's your assessment of the secondary before we get to the safeties?
Yeah, the secondary, I think, you know, you got Carlton Davis, who's looking to prove that he is a number one, that he can lock down and play and really compete hard against opponents' number ones. And you got Tyrion Arnold. I think that he's going to compete at a high level. Yeah, he'll take his lumps early. He's a rookie, but he'll also have moments where he'll definitely start to show progress. So I think the early part of the season will be key to evaluate. Amik Robertson is a pleasant find. He's a gamer. He battles. Yeah, it's going to, I would say that, you know, you look at it in terms of starting, in terms of, you know, the better way to look at it is playing time percentage on the snap counts. And I think that, Robertson will get most of the reps at nickel, but Ennis Rakestraw is going to play quite a bit, especially if he stays healthy. I think you can move him in different matchups to the outside. You can move him to nickel and he can do a lot of different things. So I expect that Ennis Rakestraw is going to be around 50 to 70% of playing time percentage every single week. But Amik Robertson is going to compete at a very high level and will do some things, brings that dog mentality. He's out to prove that he belongs as well. So I think collectively you can mix and match the parts at a very, very very solid rate. And then, you know, also too, at the same token, if there are matchups that are difficult, you can also slot Iffy on the outside as well, opposite of Carlton Davis. So you have Aaron Glenn has a lot of options. And he said, you can kind of tell that, hey, he can kind of deploy a game plan that any game plan that's needed to suit the Lions' needs, it can probably be deployed with the talent that they have in the secondary. I'm excited to see it.
Yeah, I am too. Again, it feels like they're going to be a little fluid back there too, where some guys might move between nickel and safety. You know, we already heard Brian Branch is going to be playing more safety because they want him on the field more is what it sounds like. But like I think you just said it, it's going to be situational things that will dictate the personnel on there. And so even though people want to know who's the number one, who's the number two, who's the nickel, who are the safeties, you're probably going to see three or four sub packages throughout a game that depending where they're at and what's going on, you're just going to see a variety of things, which is also going to keep the other team's offense on their toes, not knowing what to expect. So that's exciting there with that secondary. I think the biggest thing I'm going to say, and I'll probably say it again in the next few shows I do, is give the secondary some time to gel. You got a lot of new guys, a lot of moving parts, and they're still getting the feel for each other. But that is exciting too. And if they can just cover a little bit better for a little bit longer than what happened last year, that increases the chance of the sack totals going up because the quarterback can't throw it as quickly. So, all right, John, let's look at the whole roster, 53-man roster. It's coming up soon. Is there a certain guy who has caught your eye in camp that you're like pulling for? You're like, man, I really hope this guy makes the roster that maybe he was counted out, or maybe he's struggling to make the roster that people thought was going to make the roster. Is there one guy that you're like, hey, I'm pulling for this guy?
Yeah, no doubt. Real fast too, you know, and you look at it too with the secondary, you get Puka Nacua and Matthew Stafford week one. So right away you get the test. So it'll be really key that they get off to a good start. Yeah, training camp always produces great stories and things like that. You know, I like the Dorrice Fountain story. He thought about retirement and really worked towards getting back out there and dealing with things. I like Uku. I think that his story is great in terms of resiliency, a player that has dealt with multiple injuries in college and is working his way back and having some success. So you always pull for guys that have kind of battled some things mentally and their confidence and also make plays, but it's just about consistency in this league. And you look at it and you say, hey, when you've been given an opportunity, if you take advantage of it's great. I think Matthew Betts really is somebody that has an opportunity to grow with this football team. If he doesn't make the roster, maybe he ends up on the practice squad here in Detroit as he continues to develop. And even if he makes the roster too, as another depth piece, somebody that they're trying to work, it's just unfortunate when you hear that they tried to move him to Sam linebacker, it just kind of was flooding him with a lot of information. Same with James Houston. So it kind of limits a little bit what you can do with them, but you can never have too many pass rush specialists. So I'm all down for that if he can showcase a little bit more in the final preseason game. But to me, I think he's going to make the roster, but I'm pulling for him greatly. And it's been great because I can kind of tie it all together. In my time covering the team, I really didn't have a lot of player guests on my podcast. It was a lot of opinions. It was a lot of bold takes and a lot of in-depth stuff about the team from an insider perspective. But I always knew I could interview a lot of talent and a lot of players. So when an opportunity presented itself to interview Jake Bates, I just said, I'm going to take advantage of it and have an in-depth conversation with him. And he was great. He was very open and honest and forthright regarding, you know, what it was like to have all that fanfare, what it was like to kick a field goal and have everybody talk about you and then end up in the place where you've kicked and had that level of success. So to see him and to then now kind of foster a relationship where after practice, I can go to him regularly and get some insights. And then to talk to his position coach, who's even more open, and Dave Phipp, one of the most open and honest position coaches, you really kind of get an insight into, okay, how's this kicking situation going to go? And it's intriguing because that player represents something about football that's unique in that he's got an intangible, but not a lot of experience. The man, if you were out there, you heard how the football just comes off his leg. He's got a monster leg, legitimately probably got 70 to 75 yard range, but it's going to be, can you kick that football straight through the uprights? That's going to be the key. You saw him miss an extra point, but he did go 4-for-4. So I'm rooting for him to make the team and to become like a Harrison Butker or a Tucker, where he's just Mr. Automatic. But it's just difficult because he's inexperienced in terms of kicking in the NFL. And you hate to put it out there in terms of bad juju, but could you imagine if he's got to make a big kick late in the year? I think at this point, many people would still have their heartbeat palpitating. They know that he can get there, but will it hit the up? Will it go through the upright? So I'm rooting for him. I think that as long as he can keep another kicker out of the locker room there, it's his job. And man, it's just fascinating because the man can boom the football, but you just sometimes don't know where it's going.
Yeah, he's a really unique specimen and a very exciting story. I actually wrote a nice article on notthesameoldlions.com about him and about how that kick in the New York Giants game may have been a kick that elevated him. And yeah. I drew a piece from history back in 2001 when University of Maryland kicker named Nick Novak hit a big kick against Georgia Tech. And from there went on to have a great college and a great NFL career, 10 years at that. So, yeah, you know, and if Jake Bates can, you know, replace Matt Prater, I think Lions fans would be really happy for that consistency and that long ball range. And just it adds a whole nother dimension to this team. So, John, you did earlier mention you sat down with DJ Reader, and I happened to listen to that podcast already. And I know DJ's got a great reputation for being a person who's involved with his community. And, you know, I'm going to encourage listeners to go out and check out that conversation that John had with him. But, John, if you could just give the listeners one takeaway you had after sitting down and talking to DJ, what might that be?
Yeah, smooth, man. He's a veteran. He understands what's going on. And you feel for guys that have battled multiple injuries. You can just see the passion that he wants to be healthy. He wants to be part of this football team, and he's battled a couple significant injuries. He may not be ready for the start of the season, the first week or two, but I know that he's putting in the work to get out there, and the potential is there when he's healthy, that he can be a run stuffer and take some attention away from Aleem McNeil so that he can operate and do his thing. So I think he's going to be a valuable piece later on in the year. And I think he's got a lot to prove. I think he's very personable, very friendly, down to earth. And I thought it was just funny, just on a side note, that, you know, you work hard to secure an interview. And, you know, me, I'm more, you know, if you know me personally, I'm more of a behind the scenes producer, podcaster type, not so much into the video, but I'm moving towards it because that's just the way it goes. And then you're like, okay, you get the photo of yourself, you know, with DJ Reader, you're happy, you put it out there online. And the first couple things people are saying is like, man, he dwarfs you. And I'm like, yes. He is a 6'4", 340-pound defensive lineman. And I am a 5'4", 198-pound reporter. So if he didn't dwarf me, that would also be a little bit concerning. But the way the photo was taken makes me look maybe even smaller based on how it was. It was in a school. That's the way it was taken. So I had no ill will for all you clowns out there that were joking about it. Check it out at Detroit Podcast. You can laugh at my expense, but I thought that he was gracious to speak to me before the foundation event. And he's somebody that has received presidential awards for community service. And I just think that when you're raised right and you come from a family, a strong family foundation, and you want to give back, that he's going to leave his mark not only on the football field but away from it as well. And it was a pleasure to talk to him. I enjoyed the 12 to 15 minutes that I had to talk to him, and you just get a sense that, you know what, it's been a grind to rehab, but he's willing to do anything and all things to get back to help this Detroit Lions football team.
Awesome, John. Yeah, and you know what? That speaks to the type of character, the type of people that Coach Campbell and Brad Holmes are bringing into that Lions locker room. And a lot of excitement to see what he can do when he gets fully healthy and out on the field as another member of this Detroit Lions 2024 squad. John, thanks again for taking the time to be here. Can you again please remind the listeners where they can find your work?
Yeah, no doubt. Thank you for the time. I listen, you hit me up anytime. I know we've talked before about Lions football and podcasting, and I always enjoy reaching out to those that are intrigued by this awesome style of broadcasting and podcasting. I know you're also out there in the community too. You went out there and did the Jamison Williams community event. So you're doing great work with the Same Old Lions website and podcast. So keep it going. I want to keep reading the great work you did. I like the Nick Novak story. I thought that was very interesting to put that name back in my lexicon. For me, You can find me on Twitter at Detroit Podcast. That's the hub. That's kind of where you can connect to everything, where you can reach me. I feel like I respond to most things, or at least will like most things that are sent my way. But that's the hub. But at the same token, if you want to visit and get daily insights, analysis, videos, and free comprehensive coverage of the Detroit Lions, just visit si.com/NFL/Lions. The website is called Lions on SI. If you just Google it, you just type in Detroit Lions SI and you'll find it. Or if you see my name, John Macaroon, all the stories are there. We put out about 5-6 stories every single day. I'm at Allen Park for every single practice at training camp, and we provide inside analysis. And I think that the one thing that we bring to the table is this free coverage. You don't have to subscribe to anything. You just click on it, enjoy the videos, enjoy the content every single day. And we try to bring it from a perspective that's relatable and understandable from a person that grew up a season ticket holder who suffered through the Matt Millen era, where I can recall, you know, season tickets where I think in my lifetime, my 6-7 years as a season ticket holder, the Lions maybe won 6-7 games. So we were tortured. It was tough, but I lived through it. And now on the other side, to be a media member covering the team, it's been great. And I hope you enjoy the ride with me, because I think that we bring you a level of coverage that's fair and balanced and very similar to everybody else.
Awesome, John. I appreciate it. And I was working for an NBC affiliate in television during the Matt Millen era. And let me tell you, it was rough. I mean, I tuned into every game, you know, faithfully, but those results were oftentimes very disappointing. So, John, thanks again for being here. Have a good rest of the preseason, and can't wait for the kickoff here in just a very short time. Folks, thank you so much for tuning in. You can find more episodes and content at notthesameoldlions.com. If you're listening on YouTube, please hit that like button. And while you're at it, tell your friends about the show and please subscribe regardless of your listening platform. Until next time, stay gritty, my friends.